Thanks for joining us. Legends and Losers is sponsored by Oracle NetSuite. To turbocharge your growth, check out netsuite.com/legends. On today's episode, the incredible Jeff Denham. He is a Patagonia-sponsored big wave surfer turned into an entrepreneur. And we have an incredible conversation. Jeff's one of the toughest guys I know, and this is his second visit on Legends and Losers. And this time we focus on his business, not his incredible athletic achievements. And just as a side note, he is one of the very few one-arm big wave surfers, big mountain skiers, amongst many other things on the planet. Just an incredible athlete. But today what we're going to talk about is his entrepreneurial endeavors. Specifically, what's going on with the terrifying year-round West Coast fire season that we seem to be in, and how Jeff and his partners are trying to build a company to save the planet, save firefighters, and stop these horrible wildfires.
Hello, my legendary friends. This is Legends and Losers, the show for people who like to eavesdrop on killer dialogues, brilliant rants, and crazy diversions, straight up with a business twist. Hosted by Christopher Lockhead, former three-time CMO and co-author of Play Bigger, who has one of the most strategic minds in marketing, but could also hide his own Easter eggs. And now, strap yourselves in. It's time for Legends and Losers.
All right, all right, all right. Hey-ho, let's go. Hello, my legendary friends. Welcome to a special episode of Legends and Losers with my friend, entrepreneur, and incredible athlete, Jeff Denham. If you're brand new to Legends and Losers, thank you so much for checking us out. This is not your grandmother's podcast. And if you're a longtime listener, you're the reason we do the show. Thank you for sharing the show. And most importantly, thank you for investing part of your life with us. Now, Jeff Denham is one of the most inspiring guys I know. He lost his arm when he was a young man in a horrible fishing accident when he was a merchant marine. He is one of the most, in the parlance of our times, legit watermen you're ever going to meet, whether it's stand-up paddleboarding, surfing mavericks, or any you name it in the water, Jeff's doing it. Now he's dedicated his life to being an entrepreneur, and in specific, trying to build a company that makes a giant difference with these horrible wildfires. And that's really what our conversation centers on today. And I also need to let you know that, you know, I've gotten involved with Jeff's business. His mission is one that I really care about. His company is called Atira Systems. And I believe in him. I believe in his mission. And I also believe that entrepreneurs, amongst other people, but entrepreneurs are uniquely positioned to change the world. And this is an entrepreneur who wants to stop wildfires, stop dumping toxic waste on the planet, and ultimately give firefighters what they need to make a difference in what has become a horrible, frightening reality on the West Coast. This is an incredibly illuminating conversation with an inspiring entrepreneur. Here he is, Jeff Denham.
Like, my dad's like beside himself because it's supposed to be covert warfare, and they're all over Instagram, and they're all over, there's pictures of them, they get their own sites, and it's not covert, it's overt.
I thought the job now was to broadcast to the enemy what was up.
Apparently, well, it's the brand everything you do. And you know, and I will say this, the jobs that those guys do, it's not mediocrity. And in my opinion, 99% of social media is the glorification of mediocrity. You know, somebody fucking posting a video of him doing a backflip. Seems to me in the 1970s, I was watching the Olympics and there were 13-year-old girls doing multiple backflips in the 70s, and they were Olympians. So like, what's so special about your backflip? You know, people, they post things of themselves that it's just mediocre stuff, and it's just kind of distracting from what's really important.
But you, as a professional athlete, don't feel like you need a big Instagram following?
No, I don't have a big Instagram following, and we're supposed to, as Patagonia athletes, be all over the social media sphere. And I disconnected for 2.5 years and just reconnected because I got shit for it from my boss.
Your Patagonia boss?
Yeah. And not a lot of shit, but hey, you know, this is what we do, and this is part of your gig, and it helps promote our brand. And so you might want to think about re-engaging your Instagram. which, you know, I've got like 3,000 followers because I'm absolutely listless about promoting anything on there.
But, well, some people would be stoked with 3,000 followers.
I guess, unless, you know what sells on Instagram is tits and ass. I mean, you look at those that have millions of followers and they got nice tits and a nice ass, right? And whenever I post something on my thing about an environmental issue and it's got a boring slogan about an environmental issue that's, oh, by the way, going to really fuck things up, nobody likes it. And then I post a picture of a big wave and all of a sudden everybody likes that. So the shit that matters doesn't get attention on there.
People are so
conditioned to this, just like wanting to see a hot chick or someone in the process of potentially dying.
Yeah. We live in an era of clickbait and Kardashian ass selfies.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
She's got a nice ass. Is it real? That's the thing. I found out, I was on a surf trip for Cole Christensen's bachelor party, and we went to Guadalajara, which he went to great lengths to explain to me was actually a really cool city. And he was right. And his friend owns all these clubs and all these fancy restaurants. We went and surfed Pascuales, which is a powerful beach break in Oaxaca, Mexico, north of Puerto Escondido, which is more popular. And then we went into the city and we're partying. And I'm like, what's with all these girls' butts? They're all like perfect. And he's like, and then he and his buddy were laughing at me. They're like, Denholm, they're implants. I'm like, women get implants in their asses now as well as their breasts.
In Guadalajara, so, or anywhere. Mexico,
it's big in Latin countries where they, you'd think they'd have the proclivity for, you know, generally, like you've been to Brazil, like all the girls have
big booties. It's not just squats. Booties,
right, no. It's genetic, I think, but they were all howling at me because I had no idea that there was such thing as a fake ass. And I'm like, what is the fucking world? I mean, like I'm looking around in this club going, holy moly, these chicks are, and they just ruined it. Because I'm like, I try to be a keep it real kind of guy. And that's not real. A fake ass is not really, like, what's the...
You mean you don't have any Botox in your face right now, Mr. Denholm?
Not that I know of. Unless someone did it to me in my sleep. It's not going to fucking help anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of...
Are we on again?
Yeah,
are you sucker punching me again? I'm, you did this to me last time. You. We were talking about all this nonsense. How small my penis was, and then all of a sudden we're live.
Tell us again how it measures out there, Mr. Denholm. So I got to ask you this question. When I grew up, best I remember, there were four seasons. And now I hear this term living in California that there's this thing called fire season. So what's fire season?
It's changing. It used to be 3 months, 4 months of a dry mid to late summer, early fall season in California specifically. It's different in Oregon and different in Washington and Idaho, where all the plants had time, the fuels had time to dry out, and then the Santa Ana winds would kick up and then some moron would light a fire and it would get out of control. But the new norm is they're starting in May. And last year, the largest wildfire in California state history until this year, last year was the Thomas Fire in Ventura in Santa Barbara, started in December. And it was the worst in state history until this year's Mendocino Complex Fire, which started in July, which is early for California.
Way early, right?
In Oregon and Washington, you'll find that lightning strikes and storms will cause fires in the eastern central part of the state in areas that aren't typically not that high in population. But when you look at California, there's nowhere that's not high in population. I mean, there are big population centers everywhere in what is referred to as a wildland urban interface. It's where population centers meet fuel loads, a high level of fuel loads.
Hold on, slow down. Say that again.
It's the WUI. It's an industry-related term that defines an area where large population centers interface with fuel loads, meaning trees and bushes and grass that burns and is dry. And the bottom line is, development's not slowing down, it's increasing. The state population is like 30 million and going up, up, up. And so development's never gonna stop. The planet's heating up. Whether you believe it's from humans or not, it's fucking happening. And so the fires are getting worse and worse and more frequent, and they're threatening, as we saw last year in Napa and in Ventura, they're threatening thousands of humans' lives and homes and billions in property damage and structural damage. And so it's, from my perspective, you know, it's horrible, but for us in the fire industry, it's an emerging market.
Yeah.
Certainly as a contractor leasing engines, because the agencies can't keep up. So they're coming to people like us to augment their resources.
So I think I didn't know until I met you how much the private sector is involved with fighting these fires. So when we have these huge fires going on, how much private sector involvement is there in trying to get these things under control?
Well, we operate through the U.S. Forest Service on a federal basis through what's called the Viper system. And they will call us when their resources are spread thin. There'll be fires all over the country. And then you've got private contractors that work directly under contract for insurance companies to protect their key account holders. But, you know, I've got Randy here, one of our employees, and he's throwing stats at me here because the CEO of the company doesn't know enough. But what are you saying here, Randy? 20 to 40% of so 20 to 40% of the resources, fire engines on a fire, are private.
Wow.
These days,
because I didn't know that.
The fires are so big and bad, we run out of equipment.
My guess is the average American, the average Californian, the average West Coastian doesn't understand how much resources brought in from the private sector.
Yeah, that and other areas of the country, the professional firefighting agencies are brought in from all over the country. I mean, this year we had firefighters from Samoa in California.
What?
Fighting fires. Yeah, they brought in Australian teams and other firefighting teams from all over the world to help us.
We had to bring guys in from Samoa to help us fight these fires.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
And the problem's only going to get worse. I mean, the fire scientists and climatologists are speculating that wildfire propensity is going to go 10x in the next 50 years.
Slow down, handsome.
Yeah, 10x.
We're going to go whatever it is now on the West Coast.
Which is bad.
I don't know. I turn on the news, okay, and forget political stuff, where you land on that. But you turn on the news and the environmental stuff, the hurricanes on the East Coast, West Coast on fire, like what happened in Europe this summer with all the fires, it seemed really shocking to me. Mm-hmm. It just, like, the environmental news is terrifying, and you're saying the fires are going to get 10x worse?
That's the projections.
Over what period of time, Jeff?
The next 50 years. And if they're 10 times worse than they are now, that's a big problem. I mean, the thing that, whether you believe that carbon issues in the atmosphere are causing the climate change or not, our trees are there as filtration devices. They're the planet's lungs. And so when they're drying and burning, it's only exacerbating the system because they can't absorb CO2 from the atmosphere. And so it's almost like this vicious circle. The more they burn, the worse it gets. The less healthy lung you actually have to offset this imbalance of CO2 in the atmosphere.
And we had Paul Holland on the podcast a while back. He's one of the top VCs in Silicon Valley. And he built a home, beautiful home, that at the time was rated the most environmental home in the United States. And I think it's in Woodside.
LEEDS certification.
Yeah. He actually, the gal who was the creator of that certification consulted to him on the creation with him and his wife of this home.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So very cool kind of forward-leaning thing. And we talked a bunch about it. But in that discussion, he said something to me that has been rattling around in my head like ever since, which is, during our lifetime, the Sierras are going to cease to be a meaningful source of water for California.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
Have you heard that, Jeff? Does that triangulate?
I've heard a bunch of different stats. I don't know what's accurate because I'm not an expert there, but I read similar stats to that in articles from time to time. And what's really scary is, I mean, forget the houses and people, you can't forget them, but we're like a breadbasket for the nation. We're a huge agricultural center.
I think ag is number two in California behind tech, isn't it?
In terms of industry? It would be. Yeah. And you know what the number one crop, cash producing crop in the state is?
Really?
Yeah, weed.
Wow, already?
Yeah, it has been for a long time.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I figured maybe it was grapes, you know, booze or drugs.
It's just taxable now. It's not black market anymore.
Yeah, we just had Dennis O'Malley on, and he's the president of the largest integrated pot company in Northern California.
We were looking for locations for our company to expand for our contracting business, where we house our engines and build the accessories that go on our engines, or engines that we may sell to contractors or fire agencies. And we couldn't find a building because they're all being gobbled up by indoor growers to take advantage of the emergence of that market. This is in Oregon. We're based in Albany, Oregon, which is just outside.
The potrepreneurs, is that what we call them?
Potrepreneurs, yep. Not us.
Yeah.
We'll put them out when they're on fire, but...
And so I also wanted to ask you about sort of the risk to firefighters. I was talking to a good buddy of mine who's a retired fire chief, and I had this assumption that he tells me is completely wrong. My assumption was, as a firefighter, the guys and gals fighting these forest fires have oxygen on their faces. They're protected from breathing this shit in. And he said that's absolutely not the case, that most of these firefighters are just breathing this stuff in for many, many days at a time as they're fighting these fires.
In the wildland, yes.
Yeah,
In urban settings, if they're entering a building, they have breathing control, a breathing device.
But in the wildfires, they don't.
In most cases, no. You see these hotshot crews and hand crews, they are not all equipped with breathing apparatus. And I think, I mean, Randy could correct me if I'm wrong here, because I'm not a firefighter. And again, we got Randy Smith here in the room, who's one of our employees and a firefighter, originally started with us in our contracting business and has now proven to be a ninja jack of all trades and is carving out his path in the company. But I think that they're primarily used in interior attack and interior firefighting. Yeah, so he's nodding yes, he doesn't want to talk to us.
Yeah.
But so in the wildland application, it's just extra weight and cumbersome, and they're not
apparently
using
they don't
so
last
right.
very long, right? They last in a half an hour, 45 right. minutes, something like that.
Right, right.
You got to say something now, Randy. You got to tell us.
Randy's going to talk.
Oh,
I got you.
Yeah, so for going into an interior of a room and contents, those backpacks probably last a half hour, and that's it. And it's a full like scuba tank on your back that you carry around. In wildland, you're already carrying a 40-pound pack, 50-pound pack.
So you're not going to carry a scuba tank on top of that.
No,
it just doesn't work.
No.
And so the aha for me in this is, you know, the environmental impact of these fires, you know, is clear, right? It looks horrible, although I want you guys to elucidate on that. The economic impact is clearly horrible. The loss of life, and not just human life, of course, there's animal life, there's vegetation, key ecosystems. But the thing that I didn't get on this path is, if I'm a firefighter fighting these wildfires, I mean, I'm exposed to toxic chemicals, and of course, I'm exposed to the actual fire smog, or what would you call it? Is there a special name for this smoke off the fire?
No, it's just smoke. But you're right. We're out there at least a few days, and can be up to 2 weeks at a time, and we'll only have 2 days off, and then we'll come back out on the fire if they want us back.
But I mean, when I used to live in Tahoe and we used to have those fires, I would feel it in my lungs so bad. And, you know, at points, Truckee was sort of socked in with smog for 2 or 3 weeks. I'd have to get the fuck out of town because it was making me sick. And that was a guy, you know, living near the fires. I mean, how does it work for you guys in terms of sucking in all that smog?
It doesn't work. Our guys come back, my business partner, Randy, these guys come back and they're healthy guys. Randy's an ox, you can see him, but they all come back sick. They're coughing, they're hoarse, they're sleep deprived. So it's a really demanding job, and these guys are fucking heroes. And whether a community is threatened or not, they're out on the front lines subjecting themselves to imminent peril, to being burned over, and then insidiously to exposure to smoke and inhalation that's going to could potentially cause long-term health problems. And then the reason why ATIRA systems exist, as you know, and we've discussed in a previous episode, is that, you know, the wildland chemicals and the firefighting chemicals that we're using to combat these fires and proliferating at even greater rates to keep up with the problems as they increase due to the climate issues, they're causing bigger health problems than the smoke itself. And they're causing bigger environmental problems than the fires themselves.
So let's unpack this, Jeff, because this is something I didn't know. And I think my guess would be most people don't understand. What are the chemicals that firefighters use, either coming out of the hose or dropping out of an airplane or a helicopter?
Right, there are different classes of retardants. There's Class A, B, and foams. Class A foam can be found on most trucks in America. It's a surfactant in high concentration and a liquid concentrate. It's toxic. They dilute it quite a bit. It's supposed to use...
It's diluted with water.
Water, right. They adduct at a certain rate bit with a control mechanism on an engine, and an engineer would do that. And they proportion into the water strain is supposed to help water penetrate better. It's a surfactant. Then you have class.
So when I see a house in my neighborhood on fire, and the Santa Cruz Fire Department shows up, and they're shooting what I thought was just water, good old H2O. They're not. There's this chemical in it.
Yep, Class A foams.
And those Class A foams are being used on a regular house fire.
Yes.
And they are toxic.
Yes, in high
and there's
concentration.
No there's no debate about this. I mean, people don't argue, or do they argue?
No, I don't know if there's much of an argument. The foam that's used, the fire departments aren't even allowed to train with them because they know that they're toxic.
When you guys train, you're training with H2O, period.
Yes. And so, especially... in smaller areas, if there's a small fire, the fire departments will kind of bicker over who gets to go put out the little fire because they want to use it as a training exercise for foam because there's all kinds of environmental controls on the foam and they're not allowed to train with it.
Wow. Okay, that speaks volumes.
So that's Class A, and that's
that they're blowing on, they're throwing on your house.
They're usually using that in urban attack and in structural firefighting. Then there are the big bad wolf, the one that's famous quote unquote in California because all the imagery is the red stuff that you see coming out of planes.
Yep.
That's Phos-Chek, and it's a long-term retardant that contains phosphates and other things that are bad for the environment, bad for fish, bad to breathe in under superheated situations. I mean, another reason why we exist, ATIRA exists, despite all common sense, entrepreneurial common sense, is because 63% of all firefighters in the country, heroes, they're fucking heroes, die of cancer. Now, can
hold
we
on, hold on, slow down. 63%
of all firefighters in the country die of cancer. They have the highest cancer mortality rate of any occupation in the country.
What type of cancer is it, Jeff?
They're all different. And they see, from what I've read, a lot of it's pancreatic, liver. And so are there direct correlations to specific retardants that are causing that? There haven't been a lot of studies pointing those fingers or conclusively determining that, but it's been conclusively determined that firefighters have a higher rate of cancer due to the exposure of the types of things they're dealing with in burning buildings and in burning wildernesses. Smoke, stress, the oils, the gas, the retardants certainly, toxic transdermal toxicity. So they have proven there are a class, and it's Arlene Bloom, PhD chemist, head of the Green Science Policy Institute, the de facto litmus for green chemistry nationally. And she's one of the foremost minds on toxic retardants in the world. She's on our board. I met her through the Patagonia family. And she's spent the last 20 years fighting the manufacturing and proliferation of the retardants that are used impregnated into furniture, clothing, mattresses, curtains and things like that. And the class of retardant that's being used in those has been proven directly proven to cause cancer in firefighters. It's the most volatile. They wear a Nomex suit when they go in the building. They've proven that these off-gassing of these retardants that have negligible benefit in stopping anything from burning are permeating their Nomex and transdermally affecting them and their health.
Slow down. So I buy a mattress. It's got some kind of a fire retardant treatment of some sort.
Right.
That causes me cancer. Just sleeping on it?
Yes. She used the case study of pregnant women to prove that the exposure to these chemicals causes endocrine system failure in their babies or affects their endocrine system. So it was causing birth defects.
Just by sleeping on these mattresses.
Just by having exposure while they were pregnant to these substances in the home. And there are very, as you can imagine, big companies. When I first started working with her, she suggested to me that the company that manufactures the FosCheck that she'd been fighting for years, because they also manufacture some of the chemicals that she's been lobbying against. She suggested to me, she's surprised they hadn't knocked her off yet because she's creating such a ruckus.
Do you want to say who that company is?
I don't know if I do.
Okay. Yeah.
They're big. And firefighters are fighting using the tools they have to protect our lives, right? They're not the bad guys. And the agencies that purchase them are purchasing what's available. And they're doing the best they can to protect the public. And they're being, they're being run by politicians whose lives...
A little less table banging.
They're under pressure to support the needs and wants of their constituents. And so they just have not been alternatives to the existing technologies. Well, the problems are getting worse and worse. The fires are getting bigger and badder. The population centers are growing. Urban centers are getting more and more dense. The fires are being more impactful there. In the wildland urban face, like we discussed earlier, it's becoming a huge problem. They lost billions in structures last year alone. And so, for example, on the exponential increase of fire, last year we thought the Thomas Fire was the biggest state history. It's already been surpassed. 1 year later, the Mendocino Complex Fire surpassed last year's fire as the worst fire in state history. And it's going to continue. And so to me, the question was, all right, so in last year, we dropped 13 million gallons of FosCheck on the state of concentrate, right? So that's probably equates to like 100 million gallons of toxic water from jetliners onto our natural environment, into our neighborhoods, into our watersheds, and on our firefighters' heads. And so what if propensity of fire is going to go up 10x in the next 50 years? 50 years, we're going to use 50,000 gallons of concentrate in 5 years from now? It's just unacceptable. So the question was, how do we stop this? Well, we had to create an alternative. Can that alternative be based solely on environmentalism? No, we had to create an alternative that was a paradigm shift in performance. Because the firefighters...
They weren't going to do it just for environmental reasons.
Well, it's not that they weren't, but they need a better weapon. It needs to get their attention. It needs to work better. That's what these guys want. They're going into battle and you're going to take one gun from them and give them a new one. You got to prove that there's an advancement. And the battle's getting bigger. The enemy's becoming more and more, right? There are more and more fires, so they need better guns. Well, we made one. And oh, by the way, that gun doesn't kill your friends. We made a gun that, and it's probably a bad analogy these days, a gun, but we've made a tool or a weapon to combat these fires that doesn't cause bigger problems than the fires themselves.
And so there's two problems, as I understand it, right? Problem number one, to your point, is they need a better tool set. They need better technology because dropping this nasty FosCheck and this other stuff, Class A foam,
snake oil. I met with the head of mergers and acquisitions for a big multinational that we're probably going to end up partnering with our product, because if we're going to play this David and Goliath game, we're going to have to get it in bed with one of the Goliaths to succeed.
But don't these Goliaths look at it and say, I need a better alternative?
They may be now, because it's ramping up the social, the social awareness of these problems is starting to grow.
I mean, if I look at the Napa fires by way of example, or any fires that are around massive food sources like that, and all this nasty shit is being dropped on either directly on my land where I used to grow things or near where I did, near streams that I rely on, an ecosystem that I rely on. I mean, what the fuck? Does that mean there's this nasty FOSCHECK shit in our Chardonnay? Like, what does that mean?
It is. It does. And if they were deemed organic, they're no longer deemed organic, and it's a problem. And when you have enough of these people that are...
But aren't the farmers in Napa losing their fucking minds over this?
Well, some of them are. Some of them are. And then, you know, then again, to reiterate, nobody wants to point the fingers at the firefighters like they're doing something wrong. I mean, they're doing the best they can with what they have, which is amazing. They're putting their asses in the line.
They're going into battle with an
M16, and it's what they've been trained with, and it's what they use. We're just looking at it from outside the bubble and saying, look, these guys are heroes. They need better tools. 63% of them shouldn't be dying of cancer. And I'm an outdoorsman and an environmentalist. I don't want to see fish dying. I don't want to see crops affected. And when you look at the exponents and project into the future, the math's really bad. So that's why we exist. And that's why we started. That's why I started this into this crazy business.
And the thing I love about what you're doing is, you know, a lot of people would look at a problem like this and think, okay, it's a government problem, right? We need our local authorities, our state authorities, and our federal authorities to figure out what to do to solve the wildfire problem. And I guess at a meta level, you tell me, maybe it is a government problem. But at the same time, it sounds like the government hasn't been able to solve this toxic retardant problem. And so entrepreneurs have to step in to fill the gap. Is that what's going on, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, somewhat. Yeah, that's what's going on with me. And we can't say the government can't solve the problem. It's just that, you know, governments are spread thin, dollars are spread thin, budgets are spread thin.
But
we're very reactionary by nature, including in the firefighting service, right? You respond to these fires, you're not, their bandwidths are maxed to plan ahead they're just now augmenting state budgets to really address some of these issues. They're going to hire a lot more firefighters, train a lot more firefighters, and they're implementing measures within these bills to accelerate the development of technology. So we've been working directly with these legislators at TIRA. I've been in the Capitol the last 3 months, working directly with these progressive legislators that see the writing on the wall and recognize that the government needs to now start innovating, that they need to now start spending money on creating more meaningful technology to give their first responders a leg up.
And so what's that like as a startup founder and as a, you know?
There's a lot of this I don't like, but I've really enjoyed working in the Capitol and meeting learning about the process of how government works. And it's a busy place, man. The people are working hard and everybody's got a problem. You're in there with your lobbyist, you're banging on the doors, you're relying on their relationships that they've had with these legislators. You're getting in there and you get 30 seconds to 5 minutes to say your piece, and then it's up to your lobbyist to follow up, and then whether or not you made an impression. And I'm fortunate in that I'm, you know, 6'2", have a big mouth and one arm, so they don't forget me.
Yeah, you're loud.
I'm loud, big mouth, right? And so I tend to leave an impression, which is works to my advantage. I had a friend, my buddy Sean Price, a lot of you guys listening in Silicon Valley.
I knew Sean.
Yeah, Sean was one of my best friends. He was my mentor. And unfortunately, cancer, melanoma took him in a matter of months from the time of diagnosis.
At a very young age, if I...
Yeah, 53. And he was the head of Oracle's cloud. And he had shown up in Silicon Valley, much like you did, Chris, with, you know, $2 in his pocket, and exited.
He was a street fighter, wasn't he?
He's a street fighter, yeah. Well, he's a sales guy.
Yeah.
So he was where the rubber meets the road, you know. It wasn't fluff and branding, if you will. He was all about building sales organizations, empowering people with a positive attitude and a really fucking smart brain. The guy was incredible. But he said to me once, because I was doubting myself at the onset of this business when the fundraising part was thrust upon me, in that I was, you know, often I'd say to him, I'm like, look, I got to go meet this guy. He's this big CEO, Stanford grad. You know, I dropped out of college and went and became a commercial fisherman and a commercial diver. And these guys are all PhD'd up. He's like, Denholm, He goes, look, these business leaders, they meet more stuffed Brooks Brothers suit MBAs than they can count, but they never, ever meet one-arm, big wave riding, Patagonia ambassador, treasure hunting guys like you. And if you do get in, they're never going to forget you. So use that to your advantage. And so I think that's helped with these legislators. And I've certainly, on both sides of the aisles, we've won over a number of them as it relates to our mission and our perspective on the industry and what we're trying to do and how we fit in and how we can help them.
Now, many of the greatest VCs, greatest business gurus I know, they say one thing that separates legendary entrepreneurs from the rest of the pack is they are, quote unquote, mission driven. And, you know, of course,
no matter how impossible the mission may seem,
I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah, I live in a profound amount of denial every day about the precipitousness of the situation that I'm in, which enables me to get every morning and believe again, you know, I guess.
And so how do you head injuries
help, too? You know, I don't even know.
Is it the head injuries?
Yeah, the TBI and the CTE, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm dumb enough to keep going.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of being an entrepreneur is you have to be stupid enough to think it's possible.
Yep, or crazy, or
and
ballsy.
In spite of what you would think are some logical reasons for like immediate adoption of what Atira is doing, you've had to bang on this thing so hard. And so I guess, where does the mission, where does the passion for this mission come from, Jeff?
It's as I explained earlier, and it hasn't changed, and we're focused on solving two issues. One, the firefighters, our heroes, first responders are facing bigger and badder problems, and they need better tools. And so we're giving them one. We believe very much in that. And then two, the health and the environmental issues that are caused by the ever increasing proliferation of the existing technology, toxic technology, is a big problem. And it's killing fish. It's hurting the environment. I'm an outdoor guy, Patagonia ambassador, surfer, climber, skier, whatever. I love the outdoors. So
long distance, what do you call that long distance
paddleboarding?
Crazy paddling you do? Paddleboarding?
Yeah, just paddleboarding, prone paddleboarding.
But you like paddle in between Hawaiian islands and shit, right?
I've done that. Yeah, I'm kind of trying to let that go.
From which ones to which ones?
Well, every year there's a race called the Molokai to Oahu, which is sort of the de facto world championship for paddleboarding. And there's stand-up paddleboards are now included.
How long is that?
32 miles. It's from the west end of Molokai to the east end of Oahu. And it's through the Iniki Channel, which is referred to as the Channel of Bones in Polynesian history because of it's so deep. It's got so many currents. It's treacherous. And it's a tough
one. And you're laying down on the board, paddling.
Laying or kneeling. Yeah. And I lost my arm at sea, as you know, as a merchant marine. I got sucked into a drive shaft in the interim of a dragger. And the first thing on my mind after they took my arm, what was left of it, was how am I going to surf again?
Yeah.
And so part of surfing again was maintaining the musculature and the fitness, the paddling fitness, because surfing is 80% paddling.
It's 99% paddling.
80% paddling, 15% positioning, and 5% riding. That's about what it boils down to. And so I had to, I was surfed before I lost my arm, but I wasn't a paddleboarder. And I started paddleboarding, developed my own paddleboard, these blade and paddling devices for my right arm is missing. I've got about 5 inches left of the arm. My mid-humerus, not funny, but in that mid-humerus zone, I'm missing my arm. So I created these devices that enabled me to paddle, and paddleboarding has enabled me to maintain my musculature in symmetry that most prosthetics doctors that deal with amputees have never seen, and certainly it benefits my
but
surfing.
You had to work really hard to get the prosthetics right.
Yeah, years and years.
And I mean,
and
you suffered immensely doing these endurance sports with prosthetics that were less than optimal, if I could put it that way.
It would just tear my skin up. You know, I always tell this story. When I started surfing, I glue my arms to my body now, and then the wetsuit goes over the device, so it's all sealed and quote unquote waterproofed, and and they stay on much better, so I'm able to generate torque with the paddles at because, the end
so
of
the wetsuit helps the prosthetic stay on better.
No, I used to suspend them with the wetsuit, but I use a glue. And in the early years after losing my arm, I would surf for 2 days, my arm would be so burgered I'd have to take 3 days off the heel, and then I'd surf for 2 days and I'd take 3 days off the heel. I'd be just constant. My right, the stump, if you will, or the revised arm, was in a constant state of healing. My sheets were covered in blood and pus from my arm every time there was a swell for years and years and years, until I discovered.
So you could tell how good the surf was by how red your sheets were?
Yeah, exactly. It's brutal. It's disgusting. But, you know, there's no way I'm going to give up. And the same with mountain biking. I threw my arm into a device and strapped my hook to the bars with duct tape. And I used to go over the bars and just get mauled because I couldn't let go of the bike. But my arm was pounding inside that socket. I'd get off the bike and throw up because I was in so much pain those first 2 years recovering from that. So, I mean, I guess it's that same passion for those things that I'm applying to be an entrepreneur, that same level of psychosis. And it's the passion for those environments and the wildernesses and those outdoor recreation or action sports that's made me so upset about the realities of these retardants and the realities of environmental impact of any negative impact of any kind, which are increasing as population increases and consumption goes up and blah, blah, blah.
And is there anything you think the average person can do to make a difference with the occurrence of these massive fires?
Yeah, well, I mean, we can all examine our lives a lot better in many capacities, but there's nothing they can do now other than to reduce your carbon footprint, I guess, which is a big deal. But I think that the moving parts that are enabling these fires or causing these fires to be bigger and badder, there's a certain amount of momentum going here. And I'm not an expert on this subject, but it seems to me that, you know, that small adjustments of our own personal lives may slow it down, but this thing's going to keep moving. The train's going downhill.
So walk me through the Atira technology and why A, it's environmental, and B, it's a way better weapon for fighting these fires.
So what we've done is enabled. There was a gel technology out there, which my partner, when I met him, Steve Haddix, was very focused on for its performance benefits. It's in firefighting. There's a formula in interior attack or in any type of firefighting. 90% of the water falls to the ground where it does no good, and 10% actually fights fire.
Okay, well, hold on. So I'm a firefighter. I got a hose in my arm. I'm blasting a building, I'm blasting a tree, whatever it is I'm trying to put out. Only 10% of what I'm throwing onto this burning...
Yeah, of a precious resource, water, in drought-stricken states like California...
It just goes
away?
...is
going out and down the drain or being absorbed into the ground or vaporizing, and it's being wasted, but we created...
Is that because of the retardants, or is that because
of
just...
No, it's just the inherent nature of spraying water into a fire, into a vertical surface. You know, the heat's up high, and to get the water to stay there, you need to put it into a vehicle where it will stay there, and we did that. We created a gel that inverts that ratio. So now 90% of the water is sticking and staying where the heat of the fire is, and it accelerates the extinguishing of that fire.
So when you say
suppression
gel,
of that
strong,
fire.
The tier of strong water sticks on the wall of the building, sticks on
ceilings,
the tree,
right?
Whatever it is.
Yep.
And it's made up of water.
Right. It also, in direct attack in a building, when we enter an enclosed space, the steam off-gassing from the water and our gel hitting the fire pulls the heat out of the air. It rapidly lowers ambient temperatures in a building, eliminating flashover, which is a significant killer of firefighters in enclosed spaces.
How does it do that?
I don't know how the chemistry works in a scientific manner, but it's absorbing heat from the air. The gel in the steam itself has now absorbing capacity, And it's just lowering those temperatures and pulling heat and extinguishing flames faster. And then when you look at where most of the heat's in the ceiling, well, we're getting 90% of that water to stick up there where that heat is, and it burns off layer by layer in these layers of gels, and it accelerates the suppression of the flames. And then in a wildland firefighting capacity, we could be batch mixed, drawn into a plane, much like the existing marginally effective toxic products that are being used now, and dropped right onto the bushes, and our stuff wraps around vegetation that hasn't burned, prevents it from being burned. It's biodegradable. Our product's made of mostly of vegetables. It's a vegetable base. You can drink it. And so it's as green as it can get. And then it could be used as well in a long-term...
Carrots as or a, as turnips a, or...
not going to say.
Yeah, okay,
my chemist
enough.
Knows better than I do, but... So it could be also used in the same as the long-term retards. It could be used as a fire break, sprayed a gel, line of gel to stop fire from advancing across a road or something like that. A big one for firefighters and insurance companies is exposure protection. That's when in the urban interface, the wildland urban interface that we discussed earlier, tens of thousands of homes that are facing a wall of flames, they can now, with our product, replace Class A foam on their truck without changing their engines at all, adjusting and calibrating and being trained how to use this stuff, spray an exposure protection of toothpaste, our gel, on the building that in direct flame impingement will prevent the building from burning. So that's saving insurance companies billions. It's allowing the agencies to depend less on big aviation drops potentially in the future if they start to adapt their methodologies around our technology.
Isn't the greatest sales pitch for Atira those horrible aerial photos of an entire area that's been taken out, and then there's one structure that's just fine, and it was one that was protected with strong water? Like, I got
that would be a good one. Yeah, we're going to get that. We just, when one of your buddies in Silicon Valley steps up and funds me, we'll do that.
And so, you know, if you fast forward, say, I don't know, you tell me 5 years from now, where do you think we are with firefighting, these large firefights, these horrible wildfires? Like, in 5 years from now, are things better? Are they worse?
If we stay on the same path that we're on, we need better technology. We need more men. We need better forest management, meaning the underbrush needs to be cleaned out.
So that's
fuels
a real issue.
Yeah, it's the big issue. And look, Arlene.
Hold on. What do you mean it's the big issue?
It's a big issue. The forests haven't been managed properly. And you look, Arlene, who's on my board, she's the chemist at Berkeley. She's adverse to any retardants being used. She believes that we should have armies of people out there. We shouldn't be building homes in areas that burn. The homes should be built out of stuff that doesn't burn, and that we should be managing our forests with armies of people who are going out proactively clearing forests and underbrush and fuels out from the forest such that they don't burn at the rate that they do now. And she's right, but that's not reality. That's not what is going to happen.
So in spite of all this stuff, that's not going to happen?
No, they're ramping it up. I mean, part of this new bill that's passed recently in California is to allocate funds to some part of that component of the broader equation. But they are going to need to rely on technologies because the problems are getting so bad, especially in exposure protection. And we offer the perfect solution. We've been working with Cal Fire, San Bernardino County, some other smaller guys in a 3-year vetting process that we just completed. And it's been sort of survival of the valley of death because we haven't been able to go to market in good part due to a lack of funding, and that these guys are discerning. You just can't waltz into this industry. It's not a consumer market where the latest widget sells. These guys are highly discerning. They're under public scrutiny. They're spending tax dollars. And so there's a process. And we just got through that process now. And so we're starting to work with the legislators in California to accelerate the education and the proliferation of technologies like ours throughout their firefighting ranks such that they can do a better job at protecting the public and the assets of the people of California and throughout all Western states and throughout the entire world. You look at Spain, Portugal. This is a global problem. And the good news for us is the sharp end of the Navy SEALs of firefighting are right here in our backyards.
Yep.
California.
The hot shots.
So we're just trying to facilitate the use of our better weapon to their into their hands, and the rest will happen from there. And we've got a significant multinational that's positioning, watching us closely, and their former chief technology officer is now on our board of directors and is one of our principal advisors. His name's Clive Weston. He's based in the UK, and he was the CTO of the largest firebrand owning conglomerate in the world, which was Tyco International, was acquired by Johnson Controls. Tyco sold their fire division 2 years ago to Johnson Controls. Clive retired at that time, had a non-compete, which is up now, and so he sees that what we're doing is timely.
Yeah.
And he realizes that he'd been part of proliferating marginal technology, or technology that meant something 20 years ago and doesn't now. And he sees that there a lot of these big guys aren't paying attention, and it's the little guys that usually innovate, you know? So yeah, he's on board.
It takes an entrepreneur.
Right.
All right, Jeff. Well, you know how much I love what you're doing. And anything else you want to touch on before we wrap?
No, that was a quick one. All right. No, I appreciate it. I mean, we're just, for us right now, having the legislators on our side is huge. Recognizing that the state is starting to pay attention, closer attention to these issues, engaging the academics within the state, which there are obviously a lot of smart people in California, towards solving some of these solutions and being able to engage with them and help them accelerate their research, because we've been at this for 8 years as a for-profit entity trying to, you know, to succeed as a corporation in a highly competitive market. So we're excited about those changes, and you know, we are going to. I'm right now, the biggest check box I need to check is we need to raise more money to expand our efforts in the state of California.
Because you are trying to make a big change happen.
Right, we are.
Yeah,
right, and we've got the momentum.
Well, if anybody on planet Earth can do it, it's Jeff fucking Denham.
Well. Well, thanks, man.
Thank you, brother.
Okay. Thank you.
Whew. Amazing. If you loved this episode with Jeff as much as I did, why not share it with somebody right now? I think this is an very important conversation, and it's another great example of how entrepreneurs get focused on solving a giant problem, a problem that matters in the world, and are working their tails off to make big change happen. And if you love this episode, please share it. Your shares are the reason we're growing, and they make a giant difference to us. Now, our friends at NetSuite want to help you grow. I'd like you to go to netsuite.com/legends, and when you're there, you can set up a free 1-hour growth review with an expert in your industry. Now, as we sort of head towards the back end of the year, one of the things that's on the mind of a lot of entrepreneurs is planning and budgeting for the upcoming quarters and upcoming year. Well, NetSuite is awesome for planning and reporting. NetSuite facilitates both company-wide and departmental financial planning with very robust modeling capabilities, as well as approvals and workflows and all of the reporting to see if you are tracking to your plan and budget. And it all lives inside this one collaborative, highly scalable cloud offering for business management. So with Oracle NetSuite, you can literally plan and execute your growth strategy for next quarter and next year and beyond. So check out netsuite.com/legends and book your free growth review today. All right. We would like to thank the good people at Atira Systems, Strong Water Technology, trying to make a difference for firefighters and stop these horrible wildfires. Check out Atira, A-T-I-R-A, systems.com. The number one bestseller from Heather Clancy and myself, Niche Down, How to Become Legendary by Being Different. Check it out on Amazon.com. Equity Directory. Are you in the startup ecosystem? Are you somebody that wants to work with legendary startups and are willing to do so primarily for equity? Then you need to get on the program. Check out equitydirectory.com. GrowWire.com. This is a place for people and entrepreneurs who want to figure out how to grow themselves and grow their businesses. Heather and I have been writing since the official launch of GrowWire, blogging on there. There's lots of great content. There's a great podcast. There's great videos and so forth. So check out GrowWire.com. And why don't you bookmark it while you're there? The amazing folks at OneLifeFullyLive.org. This is the nonprofit started by my dear friend Tim Rode, trying to help people dream, plan, and live their best life. With a focus primarily getting you started on a solid financial footing and then building an amazing life from there. Check out OneLifeFullyLive.org. Now, are you in sales? Do you like to make money? Spiro is the mobile, intelligent sales app for salespeople and sales managers who want to close some business. Check out Spiro's, Spiro.ai. And The Marketing Journal. This is what legendary marketing people read. Check out themarketingjournal.org and the amazing people at World Wildlife Foundation. Because our planet and wildlife matter, and until Elon gets us to Mars, this is what we got. So check out WWF.org. Now, I need to remind you that this oddcast is the sole property of the Legends and Losers Oddcast Network, and we would love it if you shared the shit out of it right now. We must remind you that all rights do remain disturbed, and this oddcast is clearly produced in a studio that does contain nuts. We must warn you that if you take any of the advice that you hear on this podcast too seriously, who knows what could happen. Listen to Prince, support your local firefighters. Legends and Losers is never tested on GMOs. Don't forget, don't be lame. Get out of the passing lane. Be nice to your sister. Teach entrepreneurship. Thank you so much, Candy Dandy. I love you, Mom and Dad. And hey, Colin, this oddcast really ties the room together, doesn't it? Today, our deepest apologies go to Nick Halstad, CEO of InfoSum. Sorry, Nikki, we just ran out of time for you. That's it. Thank you again for investing part of your life with me, and look forward to seeing you again soon on Legends and Losers.